Instead of waiting to the end to ask questions, I'm going to ask some questions of you right away. How many here are currently undergrads? How many are in grad school? And then I assume the rest of you are post-grad dealing with students, perhaps. Of the group here, how many are the SSSA type? That's pretty good. And the crop science are, I'm assuming, the rest? Anybody here that would be just society, agronomy society? Okay, there you go. Well, my talk today was actually picked by me, by Mike, and providing cost-effective products to clients and managing changes in relations and market conditions. So if anybody would like to talk about that, feel free, because I'm going to move on to something I think is more important, at least what I thought this topic was about, and that is, what are the other sources of jobs outside of academia? And I'm going to focus mostly on SSSA type individuals, and in particular maybe S5, the podologist. But it could relate to all the groups in SSSA and to some degree the crop sciences. But if you're somebody who's interested in soils, especially as a natural body, as a podologist, historically, your job opportunities were government related. If you weren't in academia, you were working for the government. You were working at the federal level, either with the old SCS or now the NRCS, and probably in the late 70s, EPA started hiring some soil scientists. But that goes back and forth, along with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. State level opportunities are there. Some states still have mapping operations going on. Ohio is one. And you can get a job as a classic mapper working for a state. But more importantly, at the state level, you're usually dealing with a regulatory agency who may be administering various public health type entities. At the county level, you could get a job with a conservation district or a county health department. In fact, that's how I started in this program. I worked in a county health department for 11 years before I went on to consulting. Some say to the dark side. So, as development of environmental regulations has created the need for trained podologists to represent individuals and companies through this environmental maze. So what it has created, as we develop more and more regulations, we develop more and more need for that interface between the regulatory community and I'll call it the developing community. And that's where the consultant comes in. And certainly, classically, on-lot sewage disposal, from a podology standpoint, is where most of the private sector work is located. Dealing with, and guess, soil mapping. I mean, you go out to a site, you literally are mapping sites, trying to find, in that particular case, whether it's a one-acre site or a 100-acre site, areas that are feasible for on-lot sewage disposal. So you're still using those standard mapping techniques that are used by NRCS in producing a soil map. But it's a high-intensity map. You're also going to have skills in evaluating test pits, describing morphology, and the interpretation. That's a skill that is sorely needed, and soil judging was mentioned, and that's certainly one of the things as an undergraduate you should consider, because I don't know of any other opportunity at the undergraduate level to gain so much knowledge in soil profile description and interpretation. But even as a graduate, you could certainly assist in soil judging. Hydraulic conductivity, I'm certainly not going to get into this because a certain person in the back of the room there, Dr. Amuzagar, would go into great detail. But certainly, you have to have some experience with soil physics and the ability to run certain types of hydraulic conductivity tests. Another opportunity in the private sector is land application of sludge and septage. And right away, there's a misprint here. That shouldn't say sludge. That's to say biosolids. It's a much more friendly word. Septage is the pumpage that you have from septic tanks, and obviously biosolids is a generic term for products from a waste treatment operation. Mike went into great detail on wetland delineation. So there's a huge opportunity in the private sectors for people to develop wetland delineation skills, which from the soil perspective involves hydric soils. Certainly, We have come to recognize that people doing wetland delineations need to be trained in soils. And not many institutions offer this at an undergraduate level, but you certainly can obtain this training through one-day courses. And I'll pick on NC State at this point, which provides for an opportunity for even undergraduates, graduates, and postgraduates to take one-day courses up to a five-week course in hydric soils. So sometimes I think you need to look outside your institution. If that's the direction you think you want to go, and you need to pick up certain information, you need to look outside your institution for those needed skills. Environmental audits. Environmental audits are done, lending institutions do not like to give money to developers if there happens to be a hazardous dump on the property. So environmental audits are done to assess whether or not there's any environmental hazard to the property. A level one audit is generally a superficial evaluation, air photo analysis, interviewing people. If in the phase one level something comes to the surface that seems of concern, a classic one in the case of a farm would be in the old farmer's dump, then you proceed to a level two, which you might do some sampling around that dump. And that's where soils do come important, because certain soil features can be more conducive to transmitting an environmental contamination than others. If, in fact, in the sampling end, it turns out that there has been an impact to the environment, then you move on to a level three, which is mitigation and trying to rectify that situation. Many companies do phase one and phase two. Phase three is a specialty usually relegated to larger companies because it involves OSHA requirements, people going out there in suits to protect themselves. Alluvial soil and prime ag soils. So you're taking courses, I'm sure, at that undergraduate level or even at graduate level, and you often wondered, you know, on the mapping end, what's the point of this skill if I'm not going to become a mapper with NRCS? That's not my interest. Well, these skills come out in many other features, and this is another one. Alluvial soils. Many municipalities restrict development on alluvial soils, and they don't necessarily rely upon the NRCS map. Or the NRCS map may be much more conservative or liberal in that mapping, and so on-site testing is required. Prime ag soils is certainly a very big thing in southeastern PA, and I'm sure it's large in any kind of developing area. And so mapping out prime ag soils becomes a very important skill, because it could affect whether or not that farm literally could be developed or not. And the last one I'll mention is underground storage tank removal. Historically, that's more of an environmental science type person, but it's been our experience that you need somebody at that tank removal to assess the soil conditions for the same reasons that I mentioned before. If you have a tank that has leaked and we've lost product to the environment, you want to be sure that what direction you believe the contaminant is moving without putting in wells immediately. Because you have to remove the contamination, stockpile it, and hopefully remove it off site. If you have such things as fragipans that could control it, you can use soil science to help you mitigate what part of the hole you want to excavate and dig. So that's where soil science does come in play with underground storage tanks. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between consulting and regulatory work. And having worked both sides of the fence, I guess I can speak to this matter. For the first 11 years of my career, I was always looking at the glass as being empty. You know, there's something wrong here. What's wrong with the site? And that's a regulatory observation, which is a proper evaluation from a regulatory person to do a proper assessment. Where on the consulting side, you're always looking at the glass as half full. What's right about the site? The consultant works in the gray area. There is no ability to change black to white or white to black. But in our field, there's a large gray area. And you need to develop the skills to determine what is the proper way to assess the site and whether or not those gray areas could be a candidate for white or they should go to the black side. This was mentioned to me when I first left regulatory work. It's a given that you, when you make your site assessment as a consultant, that it was proper and followed sound scientific practices. But what is, that's just the start of it. You have to convince the person you're dealing with that what you assessed is in fact proper. And that's the bigger challenge of consulting. In fact, that's probably 75% of consulting. It's developing people skills to sell your idea. And I know it sounds harsh, but in this world, especially in this country, you're not going to get away from business practices very far. And everything we do, even in a technical field, we have to sell that idea. And you have to develop those both verbal and written skills to sell your idea to the person that you're dealing with. So from a business perspective, people generally want to work with positive people. And this again is a standard business practice. You don't want to deal with a salesman who comes in gruff all the time, okay? You're not going to buy much from him. The same thing happens in consulting. And what I see commonly is that we have strong candidates that come to work for us from a technical standpoint, but they lack that ability to work with the people. They say, well, this is the way it should be. And they're absolutely right, that's the way it should be. But what they haven't figured it out is how to sell it to either the client or the regulatory agency. They are problem solvers and they're not problem creators. So how can you prepare for a career as a consultant? Unfortunately, there's no little roadmap for that. And you know, I think more and more people are coming into our field as freshmen, even thinking of going into consulting, which wasn't the case 30 years ago when I went through school, 30-some years ago. Well, certainly academic training, and again, I'm focusing this towards pedology. You can certainly modify it for your particular interests, but you need to take all the pedology courses you can take, geology, the natural, and the pure physical sciences. Microbiology, I think, is very important in consulting, along with an epidemiology course. How to read a lab analysis. It doesn't stop there. You also need to look into some business issues. And this is something I certainly didn't do. And I have three partners. There's four of us. We're all technical people, two PhDs, one PE, and I just have a bachelor's degree. None of us had one business course. Okay? So we learned through the process of trial and error, which is not the most cost-efficient way of doing it. Okay? So certainly an intro to business course, you can get at any institution, is a must, in my opinion, if you're thinking of moving into consulting. Because in that intro to business course, they'll talk about business plans. I believe that was your question back there. You really need to formulate a business plan, and that involves a written plan. Because if you're going to go out and borrow money, the banks want to see something in writing. They want something to identify what your market is and how you're going to provide that service. So you need the skills to develop a business plan. Certainly finance and accounting is important. To me, it's a bore, but it's an important feature. If you don't understand the accounting principles or the finance, you may be the most competent person in the world technically, but you will be out of business quickly. Marketing, we talked about that already, the ability to sell your ideas. Fortunately, our company has never had to go on to large marketing schemes where we took advertisements and what have you. Our marketing plan was our work and word of mouth. But if you're a startup company, you may not live if you're going to take that approach. You may have to get out there and do some marketing. And an individual there pointed out the idea of identifying what your market is, whether it's the permanent crop called a house, and therefore the Home Builders Association is who you're marketing, or if it's some other entity. You need to identify who your audience is and then market to them. Some engineering courses would be really important. Surveying, CAD, I put GIS in here. Obviously some GIS programs are more in the agronomy side. But surveying is real important. Knowing basic survey techniques, skills. I'm not talking about going out and actually doing a boundary survey, but being able to set up an instrument, shoot elevations, run a transect, and gather that information in. CAD. Right now, if you have CAD skills, especially in where I come from, you can basically write your own ticket. People are looking for experienced CAD people to design, in my case, systems. So, academic institutions really need to recognize the training of qualified soil consultants. And I'm going to kind of lead into the next speaker here, Mike Bratkus from NC State. NC State is currently, and I'm going to let him talk about it in more detail, moving towards the development of a major as a soil scientist specializing in land development. And I believe the major will probably incorporate some of the ideas that I shared with you here today. The society needs to recognize these soil scientists as practitioners of the science. And I think that's probably the biggest fork in the road. We all cannot be researchers. And you need to recognize, I think, early in your career, which direction you're headed. If you feel that you, and I fully support it, want to go into research, we need the research. But if you're not that kind of a person, then you need to look to other avenues. And if you feel you don't have the personal skills, perhaps government work would be more suited for you. But if you're looking to government for a career, those jobs are going to be drying up. And I hope I didn't insult anybody, because like I said, I worked for 11 years as a regulatory person. I can share this with you. When I left government after 11 years, and I interviewed with a number of firms, and I kind of skipped over that, didn't look down at my notes. You basically, in consulting, have a large firm, which I'm going to say is 50 people or greater, and you're going to have the smaller firms, less than 50 people. And then you're going to have the very small firms, okay? I'm going to say the sole proprietor, maybe a few people, somebody less than 5 people. With the large consulting firms, it's not much unlike government work, okay, in the sense that they can send out inexperienced people into the field, managed by mid-level managers, check their work, the mid-level managers interact with the governmental regulators and the client. A small firm can't afford that. A small firm, less than 50, certainly less than 10, cannot afford to put a person in the field who's inexperienced, where in government, you can. And that's where I got my experience. You make mistakes, but that's part of the job. With a small firm, if you make a mistake, you lose a client, and maybe worse. So working for a government is a good place, in my opinion, to start. So I'm kind of backpedaling here to save any of my face with the government friends here. But I truly believe working for a governmental agency is a great place to start. You get a lot of experience quickly. The point is, you don't want to. If you want to move on, don't get stuck there. And I was there 11 years, and frankly, when I interviewed to leave, people looked at me and thought, "You're useless. You've been there too long. You're set in your ways." Okay. So, my advice to you would be, if you want to go into consulting, that first of all, you consider what level of academic training you want to achieve. It's very difficult to go back to school once you leave. Another example here. Okay? I would strongly encourage you to pursue at least a master's degree. Now, the PhD, they certainly can consult, but you've put yourself into a different level in consulting. BS and master's generally are what the consultants are looking for, and it's very difficult to go back. Now, it's not to say it can't be done. So if you have a bachelor's degree and you just had it with school, like some people are, I would put a timeline on it. I would say, in 5 years, I'm going to be in graduate school. That means in 4 years, you're applying. That means in 3 years, you're looking, okay? You're not waiting to 5 years, because then you're married, you got a car payment, and pretty soon, it's kind of hard to go backwards. this statement seems ridiculous at first, but if you think about it, and I'm going to use the analogy of a restaurant that you've always gone to, food's always been great, but the last time you went, you got lousy service and lousy food. You're probably not going to go back there again, at least for a while. The same thing happens in consulting. You can do great jobs for that particular client, but the client remembers the last job. And that's why every job is important. You can't put your guard down and say, well, I've worked for him for 10 years, and I'm just going to kind of push him aside and deal with this other job. The person you pushed aside won't be your client. The client always wants timely and accurate assessments with reports written in clear and understandable language. I can't stress this enough. Okay? We're not writing technical reports in private consulting. Soil taxonomy is great, but if you send out a report talking about fine, loamy, mixed mesotypic haplidals, nobody's going to understand what you're talking about. It's a nice jargon that we can talk amongst each other, but when it comes to the real world, they want to know what you found and what I can do. And writing skills are very important. Probably as important as the technical knowledge is the ability to put it down on paper. Can science responsibility determine for their client the most cost-effective solution to that environmental requirement? This does not generate information usually published in technical journals. So one of the issues that always comes to me with these meetings is, why don't consultants give more papers? Because there is no reason why my client would want to have that information published. So that's something you need to think about. If you're headed down the consulting world, currently you're heading down to a venue where it's your client's information, he's paid for it, and that's the person who owns it. It's more important not to be wrong than to be right in your assessment. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, what I'm trying to say is if you visited a site and you said in your assessment that your client couldn't do what that client wanted to do, you better be sure that is the case, because the kiss of death in consulting is for you to miss that opportunity and somebody else comes to that site and finds the proper conditions and makes it work. Consultants, especially undergrads, tend to worry about making mistakes, and that's important not to make mistakes, but the mistakes go both ways. Calling something unsuitable means that it's unsuitable, and somebody else who finds it and makes it suitable is a real business problem to you and your company. You need to work with other professionals, engineers, surveyors, landscape architects, real estate agents. I didn't put down builders, but because they're not generally considered professionals, but it's been my experience that good builders, good land developers, want to know the facts. And they tend to take it on the chin a little bit for being these entities that are ruining our farmland. But builders are only building houses because we keep making people. They're not doing it for practice. They're not just putting them up there because they like to build houses and take ag out of that particular field. So it is one of the, unfortunately, necessities of our lifestyle that as we move away from cities and we start to sprawl, we're going to be chewing up farmland. So that's a much bigger concept, and that's another talk sometime that we need to start looking back into to our city, towns, and villages and start our urban soils discussion. So in conclusion, the opportunities available to a qualified soil scientist in the private sector, in my opinion, are greater than in government or academia. Academic institutions and professional organizations such as this, SSSA, need to provide training and outreach for these soil practitioners. How we do that is a good question. And if anybody has an answer to that, I'd love to hear it. Yes?
Is it SSSA already doing it with the soil certification, certified professional soil scientists, well classified. I mean, it's already there, and there's outreach, there's CDUs, there's the tests, two exams. I'd say that actually as a SSSA is doing an excellent job.
Well, I'm not putting SSSA down, but I think if you pull the number of consultants that come to these meetings, the numbers are short.
And I don't think it's because SSSA is not doing a good job. I think it's because the consultants, I think you're right, it's a dichotomy that I don't understand.
It's a tough,
there's a National Society of Consulting Soil Scientists and they're all there.
Well, Mike brought that up to me on the field trip yesterday, and I'm not a member of the consulting group. And I'm not saying it's not a good organization. It just didn't bring to me what I needed. I mean, I have so many other organizations, wastewater organizations that I belong to, that I don't have the time for another one. And I get more out of these meetings from a technical standpoint than I would from that group, how to run a business and things of that nature. And I don't have a clear vision of how this organization could open up the consultants. But to get back to your point about certification and licensing, it certainly is good for the profession, but unless there's a regulatory reason why you need to be a licensed or certified soil scientist, it won't support it. And so some states that have licensing don't have any regulatory reason why you need to hire a licensed soil scientist, so it's sort of a moot license.
Well, there's one thing that the Soil Board is working on now is to try to get a full-time person to do that interface and get in every state that recognition, whether or not it's like North Carolina where it's a law, Florida's working on a law, Ohio's working on a law, or whether or not it's just recognized by language that these are the kind of people that you should use. And right now, some laws have ARC PACs and
yes,
they do. It doesn't exist anymore. And journalists that are there have Soil Science Board actually written. And
right.
Yes, I agree, that's where it needs to happen. And everybody here can go back home and do that. And be an advocate for soils, be an advocate for people who are trained to do that kind of work. And I think we all have a responsibility.
And you bring up a good point, because this is the group that we want to talk, what you should be doing as an undergrad or graduate to prepare yourself for life outside of academia. Certainly getting certification is important. And ARCPAPS is, I keep saying ARCPAPS, it's different now, I get the name, but okay, ARCPAPS is the program that we have, and other states that have licensing like North Carolina pretty much follow those same sort of requirements. So I would encourage you to seek certification, even though there may not be a regulatory reason why you have to have it. In your